human beings, human thought has never been challenged. Human thought has never had a competitor. As electronic circuits develop their own independent and valuable ways of processing information, I think they will help and stimulate us to be better than we know how to be today.
Cyberspace expert James Bailey, next on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Welcome to the Center's weekly radio magazine about books and ideas. James Bailey is here to talk about his new book, Afterthought: The Computer Challenge to Human Intelligence. Major funding for this edition of Soundings comes from the Computer World Smithsonian Awards Program, created in 1989 to honor innovative uses of information technology that benefit society.
Even as tasks that used to belong to our minds are reassigned to electronic circuits and then evolve into completely new forms, we have the responsibility to be active partners in the new world that emerges. None of this is very far away in time. The individual building blocks of bit evolution are mostly in place. Computer scientists have been breeding and evolving programs successfully for over a decade. The techniques are increasingly well understood. Ultimately, it may take millions of computers evolving their programs based on trillions of pieces of information to be successful at large problems. But a million computers is no longer a large number. Nor in the age of satellites does a trillion describe a large number of pieces of information. Whether we prepare them for it or not, children born today will grow up to live in a world where computers outnumber them, where bit evolution plays a prominent role, and where thought no longer holds the exclusive franchise.
Writer James Bailey, he notes that since the 1940s, computers have redefined the theoretical and practical frontiers of science and technology. He also says an article of faith since the dawn of information technology has been the shared sense that no matter how sophisticated they become, computers will never outstrip human intelligence. But today a new message is emerging from cutting-edge computer science, namely that electronic circuits really are alien, that the difference between human thought and computer capabilities is not merely one of degree, but of kind. James Bailey's new book is Afterthought, The Computer Challenge to Human Intelligence.
Well, the tasks of the mind, which we distinguish from the tasks of the muscles, are the ones that have been delegated to electronic computers. During the Industrial Age and before, we took muscle tasks and delegated them first to animals and then to machines. What is unique about the age we live in now is that the tasks we are now redefining are the tasks of the mind. And it turns out that our minds tend to be sequential, and therefore it was easy to reassign sequential tasks to sequential computers. But when we tried to assign our mind tasks to parallel computers, we started to learn about the differences.
We're talking about something as basic as the attention span. That is to say, I'm doing one thing, you're doing another. I will say to you respectfully and politely, don't interrupt me because it's gonna mess up what I'm doing, just as though if I talk to you, it's going to mess up what you're doing. Are we on the right track here?
Absolutely. We can't. As humans, we have a great deal of difficulty absorbing more than one piece of information at a time and processing more than one piece of information at a time. A parallel computer is perfectly happy processing thousands or even millions of pieces of information all at the same time.
Well, now, James Bailey, I'm going to put to you the $64 question that sort of hovers over much of your book, and that is to say, can computers think? And if they think, how do they think?
Oh, I think they can do thought, but I think that doesn't much matter. Thought is what we do. Thought is the process that has been developed by which human beings process information. And for the past 50 years, indeed, we have been engaged in trying to teach our computers to process information the same way we do.
To imitate human thought.
And we've been asking, can they think yet? Can they think yet? The more important question is, how are electronic circuits best oriented to processing information? What's different about them compared to us? and how should they be doing it differently? And that's where a new form of mathematics, a new form of science is coming to the fore, which processes information in ways that's completely different than the ways we've been taught to do it.
You say that geometry, if I got this right, should be relegated not to the math departments, but to the history department anymore.
Well, in teaching in the high schools, when we ask what our priorities are, is it a priority to teach mathematics the way the ancient Greeks did it?
Uh-huh.
I think it's important that students know a little bit about that, just like they should know about how they did art and literature. But those are his studies for historical purposes. Those are not maths that are used anymore.
Let's talk about the one of the central elements in your book, James Bailey. The book is called Afterthought, the Computer Challenge to Human Intelligence. Describe for our listeners what is happening as a people, as a society. I mean, we're talking about everybody on the planet, given the pressures and the dimensions of the most recent computational science. What is happening as we experience a shift from human to electronic intelligence? This is a very big order.
Yes. Two phases to the shift. First, we have been simply taking the processes that worked well within the framework of human intelligence and transferring them to the machine. Mm-hmm. That was what the first 50 years of computing were about. Now we're starting to see those techniques change to better fit what electronic circuits are good for. That mostly means a change from doing things sequentially to doing things in massively parallel ways. It also means a shift from rules and formulas that remain fixed forever, such as that the area of a circle equals pi times the radius squared,
mm-hmm.
to formulas that change from day to day and place to place.
Now, do I have it right, James Bailey, that this is a profoundly, cosmically good news, bad news situation, in the sense that we have to readjust the way we think about the way humans think, and in turn, the way humans teach computers to think?
We have to do both of those. I think it's very exciting that these new maths and new ways of processing information are giving us insight about our own ways, and we're beginning to learn more clearly what is effective about thought and what might be limiting about thought.
Mm-hmm.
The part that is intimidating for us is that as electronic circuits develop ways that are different than thought, ways which we may not understand, although they give us valuable answers, we are faced with the question of whether we can accept our computer's help even though we don't know how it got the answer.
And your argument is, let's plunge in. Let's move ahead into this new territory, because if we don't do this deliberately to try to understand this shift from human to electronic intelligence, the dark side here is what, Dr. Frankenstein? It gets away from us. It in effect does things to us as individuals and as cultures that we're not prepared for.
I don't see a cataclysmic outcome to this. I think that what we have to do is move forward together. There are other changes in our world. One of the most important is a scientific shift from physics being the master science to biology being the master science. And many of these new formulations are directly applicable to biological questions and questions of societies and living things,
mm-hmm.
just as many of the old ways were ideally suited to the industrial age.
We're talking about what? The difference between the mechanistic and the organic?
In a simple way of looking at it, that's an excellent way to look at it. It's the difference, among other things, between formulations and natural laws that are fixed and immutable, and formulations that vary from time to time.
We're also talking, James Bailey, about the difference between the predictable and the uncertain. And the uncertain carries with it a certain amount of fear and trepidation.
Yes, but our world, our universe, is mostly alive. And things that are living are not totally predictable in the same way that a planet's orbit is predictable. But there are patterns, that life has a pattern,
mm-hmm.
and that a form of processing and prediction that can pick up on these patterns and help us understand them is very valuable.
Let me argue with you, James Bailey. Why should we abandon sequential kinds of thinking if it's gotten us as far as it has gotten us? All of a sudden, we discover through the computer and the weight of history, for lack of a better term, that we have this parallel way of thinking. Isn't sequence going to reign? Shouldn't sequence reign, as it were, mathematically as well as culturally, if it's what we know and what we're comfortable with? Why should we move into this, willingly move into this new unexplored area of parallel kinds of thinking?
I'm persuaded that most of what sequential thought can discover, it has in the past 300 or 400 years, and that the new frontiers of understanding are ones that require us to think and operate more in parallel.
You're not talking about the end of science, are you?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay, we need to make that clear.
Any more than the end of geometry was the end of science.
Right.
Science is a wonderfully renewing and growing and living thing. It may be that the human mind is closely attached to sequential ways of thinking. That may be what we do best and what we always will do best.
Right.
And in order to understand things that are parallel, we may need, and I think we will need, our computers to deal with that information for us and be helpful to us. But the world is parallel. When the French philosopher René Descartes said that we should look at things that exist all at once and treat them as though they came one at a time, with a first one, a second one, and a third one.
Right.
He was distorting reality in some ways that turned out to be very productive, but which also turned out to be very limiting. What we want to do is keep the productive parts of sequential thought, but expand to understand the parts of the world that are inherently parallel.
So as you describe this shift from human to electronic intelligence, James Bailey, you are not being exclusive, you are being inclusive. You're saying let's take the strengths of both and build on that rather than be fearful about something that we're not familiar with.
Yes. What excites me is the partnership. Uh-huh. What excites me is the availability of an intellectual resource which can do what I can't and can help me understand what my mind can't get itself around all by itself.
Again, your book is After Thought, The Computer Challenge to Human Intelligence. Tell us about what you mean by the book of nature. And you have three very large operative phrases here: place and pace and pattern. What is that all about?
It was Galileo who first talked about a book of nature where the language and vocabulary was circles and lines of geometry.
Right.
He saw the world as having been expressed by geometry. And in fact, he believed that he, as a human, could understand God's intent because he understood the language of geometry with which God expressed the world.
Did he assume that this was the final language?
Of course, the only
language?
And it is a irony of history that language was coming to an end just as he was saying this, and that algebra was coming in and calculus would soon
The world has a habit of doing that,
yes,
to us, doesn't it?
Yes. The issue is that when your vocabulary is circles and lines, it focuses you on certain kinds of questions, mm-hmm, like questions of place, which were very important and are always important to human beings, that if you don't know where you are, then it's hard to then go on to ask bigger questions. We, mm-hmm, always want to be oriented. Once geometry had succeeded in orienting us, then a new form of expression, numbers and equations, came to the fore. And even to this day, we believe that the book of nature is written in numbers and equations. That's what we're taught. And that the operant idea is speed or rate of change. And you see it used to describe all manner of phenomena, whether appropriate or inappropriate.
Well, let me stop you for a moment. You're talking here about place and pace as key elements in the way human beings orient themselves in the physical world. And yet you're coming to another term, pattern, where we've got a disjuncture at work. How about this?
Yes. And in fact, pattern has already meaningfully subsumed pace and speed as the vocabulary of the scientific computing community.
Now, here we're getting into this business of levels, planes of reality, parallel kinds of thinking and activity.
What people want from their computers today is not a printout of numbers. They want patterns. They want information about patterns, particularly if the subject of study is biological or social in any way, as it increasingly is.
Now, we're working both at the level of understanding phenomena and predicting phenomena by complicating the picture.
Yes, and they're really two sides of the same coin, that if you can't predict something, you really don't understand it. And if you really do understand it, then you have some predictive capacity. But the way that myriad genes cross-express each other and a living form comes out of that is a highly parallel phenomenon and one which is a pattern. And we have to understand it in terms of a pattern, not in terms of a circle or a line or a number or an equation.
Are we back after a fashion to the infinite number of monkeys and an infinite number of typewriters trying to figure out all of the variabilities of where the world is going to go?
At the root of many of these new intermaths is the competition among thousands or millions of little entities, each of which is quite stupid and quite likely to be wrong.
Right.
But one of the outcomes of the sequential way of processing information is the need to be right. If you're only doing one sequence of thought, you are dependent upon it being right, and you're dependent on the belief that it will lead to a right answer. If you have thousands or millions of them going on, as nature has thousands and millions of experiments going on, you're not dependent upon any one of them being right as long as the better ones emerge over time.
This is computational evolution.
Yes.
This is a form, you use the word competition. What comes to mind, James Bailey, is, how can I put this? You sound so upbeat and optimistic about the possibilities for all of this parallel computing and the enrichment of computational science as it affects our culture as well as our economy, the large human enterprises, for lack of a better term. But implicit in this is, again, this sense of uncertainty. You say, for example, that everything is up for reconsideration. If we redefine the mathematical definitions of our world, everything's up for consideration. Are you talking about things like cultural patterns, morals? Again, to use a very grand term here, our Western inheritance? That's what you're questioning after a fashion, aren't you?
Oh, I think those things are up for grabs. Anytime that we change the vocabulary with which we express our ideas, then we unsettle the ideas themselves. The 20th century British philosopher Alfred North Whitehead said it best, I think, when he said that any culture has to have abstractions, because without abstractions you can't think. The job of philosophy is to critique those abstractions and point out when they're obsolete and need to be replaced.
Well, now, this makes of you something of a radical thinker. I mean, you're inviting us. For example, you say that we got to catch kids in high school to get them onto this parallel kind of thinking rather than sequential kind of thinking. That sounds like an enormously radical concept, not to mention challenge when it comes to implementing it in our schools.
It is radical. When I first came to thinking machines and saw some of these new intermaths at work, I couldn't believe that they made any sense. And if I'd had the choice, I probably would have ignored them and not really grappled with them. But over the course of a decade of grappling with them, I found them to be meaningful and true and important. So, yes, it's easy when you first see or hear about these new intermaths to push them away and say, no, this is too radical. It is the case that the 21st century will be a century focused on biology and living technologies rather than physics and dead technologies. And I think there's every reason to believe that the right preparation for that world, for students who want to be scientists, is to practice thinking in parallel and learn about how computers process in parallel.
Again, James Bailey, your book is Afterthought, The Computer Challenge to Human Intelligence. What is the aftermath of Afterthought? I want to dislodge you from this sort of optimism that I hear here. In a way, that could also be a form of another form of triumphalism. We're on top of the heap. We know where we're headed. We're doing nothing but getting better. Isn't there, after all, a sort of dark dimension here, unexpected, uncertain, that we're really not in control of when we move from human to electronic intelligence?
Oh, we're not in control. And I think that anything which disabuses us of the fantasy that we're in control is good for us.
Okay.
The reason that I am fundamentally optimistic in the long term is that I don't believe that humans have been stretched anywhere near to their capacity.
This is the old chestnut about Einstein and we only use so much of our brains, et cetera, et cetera.
When you're the top dog, you get lazy. Uh-huh. It's true in all societies. It's true everywhere you look. Human beings, human thought has never been challenged. Human thought has never had a competitor. As electronic circuits develop their own independent and valuable ways of processing information, I think they will help and stimulate us to be better than we know how to be today.
So even though we acknowledge and accept enthusiastically this shift from human to electronic, sequential to parallel kinds of thinking, you are not, you don't go to, what are they, the Terminator movies, and you say, oh boy, this is where we're basically headed, that the machines, given the leeway that you want to give them, that you endorse in this book, the machines really aren't going to take over. Because although they think differently than human beings, we're still basically in charge of the whole equation.
The idea of hierarchical thinking, the idea that every effect has a definitive cause, are deeply entrenched in Western thought.
This is sequence again.
This is sequence. Uh-huh. And they probably do not accurately describe a lot of the behavior of the world as it actually is. And so we don't want to get too caught up in the idea that we totally control them or they totally control us and there's no gray area in between. There is this myth that computers will be infinitely stupid until a certain afternoon, at which point they'll get it and instantly become infinitely smart, and the whole power relationship will change.
This is Hollywood. You don't buy that.
No. I think that a new and valuable collaborator, a new peer intelligence is in the offing, and we should be wary and scared and excited and engaged all at once.
James Bailey, I can hear somebody listening to this conversation and saying, yeah, this is exciting stuff, moving from sequential to parallel kinds of thinking, the vast opportunities and potential rewards of these wonderful new computational mathematics and sciences. I can also hear somebody saying, don't we have our hands full enough in this society with far more pressing kinds of needs, social, economic, cultural? It's like, you know, putting somebody on Mars. We really ought to put this stuff off for a while. How do you respond to that kind of way of getting your mind around our sense of social priorities?
I was struck by a study done by an ethnicist on how peoples in Southeast Asia came to see themselves as being members of a specific ethnic group. His conclusion was that they never thought of themselves that way until Westerners came and did a census. And by forcing everybody into a category,
right,
all ones or twos, no fractions, no mixed, well, I'm sort of this, but I'm also importantly that.
But life is much more complicated than that.
And So here was a case where the old sequential ways of thought were mischaracterizing our realities, our social realities, in ways that caused people to become more ethnically defined and less tolerant of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And his conclusion, and I concur, is that the old sequential way of thinking was actually causal in some of the problems we have today.
So as we come to think in parallel terms, so to speak, we not only have new answers, we reshape the very basis of the argument.
Absolutely. As we come to see that the world is inherently parallel, even if our own ways of processing information about it are sequential, then we are more accurate in how we respond to that world.
James Bailey is the author of Afterthought, The Computer Challenge to Human Intelligence. Afterthought is available from Basic Books. You're listening to Soundings, a radio magazine about books and ideas from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Major funding for this edition of Soundings came from the Computer World Smithsonian Awards Program, established in 1989 to honor innovative uses of information technology that benefit society. For more information, the worldwide website of the Computer World Smithsonian Awards Program is http://innovate.si.edu. I'll be back in just a moment with information about where to write for an audio cassette of this program. You're listening to Soundings from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. My guest this week was cyberspace expert James Bailey. Audio tapes are available for $10 post-paid. Write to us for a tape or send us your comments. The address is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27709. This week, it's program number 846. That's $10, program number 846. The address again is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Next week on Soundings, Season's Greetings. Writers Lee Smith and Jerry Bledsoe will be here to read from and talk about their new books, The Christmas Letters and The Angel Doll. Until next week's show, thanks for listening to Soundings. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Soundings is a weekly cultural affairs radio service of the National Humanities Center.